Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem Shalom Bayis Shir number 511. Towards the end of last year, we were discussing about the different perceptions that a husband and a wife have coming into the marriage, expecting the mentality and the customs and the pattern of behaviors that happened in their own homes growing up should automatically continue when they're in their new home with their own new wife or new husband, and that any changes means that there's something off with the other person or the other person's family. And as we explained, that this phenomenon is obviously a major challenge in the beginning of any marriage, but it is still a challenge even after 10, 12, 20 years after a marriage is already established. So one example is that if the husband's father used to make bank deposits and decided what bills to pay and wrote out checks, and the mother in their home asked permission before making a significant purchase. So this husband assumes that that's the husband's role. So, but however, in the wife's family, they managed the finances together. They did it together. The mother had wanted to put input to writing checks and make financial decisions. So the wife wants that too. And to her, the husband's desire to be the sole manager of the finances, that's control. You're being controlling. The husband doesn't see it as controlling because he saw it in his household as a normal thing. His mother and father got along very well. They never argued about finances. They worked things through amicably. The wife, meaning the husband's mother, was perfectly okay with it. So I asked my husband permission before I buy a big purchase. What's the big deal? So to him, it's the norm. So he doesn't understand why his wife's getting so upset. And she's saying, you're trying to control me. You're trying to control how much I spend. Meanwhile, it's a difference in perception. So another example, husband's at work or in school. Wife goes shopping with her mother. They spend an afternoon together. Doesn't call the husband to tell him about this. She didn't think it was necessary. Well, she doesn't carry a cell phone, whatever it is. Husband calls home at lunch. No one answers. No answer. He panics. And he gets upset at her for causing him so much anxiety. You should have told me. Again, it's a matter of perception. Or the wife is very close to the family. She wants every Friday night meal with her family, just like her sister and her brother-in-laws do. They go to her parents for Friday night meals. Husband, on the other hand, would like a quiet Friday night at home by himself, just the two of them alone. Wife may feel that he's not being considerate of her feelings. If he really loved her, he would agree to go out Friday nights to her parents' home. So again, a lot of it is a matter of perception and what they're used to. And the areas of these type of disagreements are very frequent and very common. It's not possible to discuss every detail. We just gave a few examples. So if one husband or wife just has that fixed position, I am right, this is the way the ship is supposed to be run, you're wrong, it creates a tremendous serious consequence of a power struggle or a master-slave relationship, and neither way it's not healthy for a marriage. So by recognizing that there is lifestyles that are different, they can work through with each other of how to work out a compromise with one another and to work through these differences. We'll go on occasion to your parents' Friday night to make you happy. And then once every 2-3 Shabbos, and we'll spend the two of us just alone. There's in the early stages of marriage, and then later in marriage, there's other type of differences. You work it too. So there's a book, which I didn't yet go through, called Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, called by Dr. Les Parrott, P-A-R-R-O-T-T. So he says as follows, and Rabbi Tversky quotes him, that two independent persons forming a way of life together eventually runs into power struggles and must learn to adjust to each other's ways. The intensity and turmoil of this stage vary among couples, but almost every couple engages in the struggle. And successful passage through this stage enables each partner to say, okay, so I'm willing to admit that my romance with the perfect partner is an illusion. However, I'm still fascinated with the mystery of who you are, and I am willing to pursue romance with you and a journey together towards a more mature love. And like I said many times, one needs to do this even after being married for 5, 10, 20 years. to have this frame of mind saying this, that we thought that we're all like disillusioned because the feelings husband and wife is more like routine and whatever it is, that it's just the way it is. And I don't know, I know everything about my wife. I know everything about my husband and there's nothing more to learn. And it's just the way it is and resigned to that is a grave error. That's not how neshamas work. They're constantly mischadish yourself. You could access wonderful, beautiful new things about learning about your husband and wife, even if you're with them already for many, many, many years. And that is the idea, to work through those differences. Now, about the differences themselves, they say marriage is 50-50. It's not necessarily true. Sometimes it is 50-50. You could compromise actually in a 50-50 type of way. Sometimes it's 75-25. Sometimes it's 100-0. 100-0 meaning in this particular prat, we're going to go 100-0 your way. And in a different aspect, we're going to go 100-0 the other way. And they work it out that way. So here's an example. It says, it seems like it is an innocent, simple example of a 100-0 scenario that works out beautifully. So this is, let's say, early in marriage. Okay, early in marriage. A wife comes home from Friday shopping. Her husband's putting up the cholent. What are you doing? So he says, I'm putting up the cholent. Wife says, that's my job. And the husband responds, my father always put up the cholent. He says this was part of his covered Shabbos. Didn't you like the cholent at our house? So the wife is good-natured, and she laughs, and she says, sure, it's great. My father doesn't know anything in the kitchen. You really like putting up the cholent? And the husband says, sure, unless you prefer to do it yourself. So the wife says, you know something? Let's see what happens. Let's see how it turns out. Next week, I'll do it, and then we'll decide which one we like better. Now, it sounds very trivial. It's a minor difference. But the bottom line is they could easily decide one way or the other. Let's say they decide the wife hops, this didn't happen in my house. My father didn't even walk into the kitchen, but my husband is, and he's putting up the cholent, and the cholent tastes great, and this is what makes him happy, and I don't necessarily need to make my cholent this way. And she may, in her mind, say, you know what, going forward, you're taking care of the cholent. And that's how they do it for the rest of their marriage. That's 100-0, doing it his way. And she's perfectly fine with it. And you could have the reverse scenario also. You have those 100-0s where it goes the way one person decides and the other one is okay with it. Okay, this is a minor difference, but even with a little more significant difference, you resign to it and it's good. It's a very cute story that he brings down from the Rebbe of Kuznets. Because of a difference of a minute, a couple consulted him. In the husband's home, I guess they had a more Shabbos morning Kiddush. And then after that, a little while later, they had a Suda. So Kugel, in the husband's home, the Kugel was served by the Shabbos morning Kiddush. In the wife's home, the Kugel was served during the meal, which was a little bit later. Each spouse wanted to preserve their family minute. So what did the Rebbe say? Make two Kugels, one for the Kiddush, one during the meal. Right? So, of course, he says differences is in marriage is more weighty than what we discussed just now about Chuln and Kugel. But the point is, though, that these differences could be worked out. If each person respects the other person's position, you could figure out a very, very common ground. Sometimes, again, Friday nights, like we discussed, the families, the wife's family, they socialize and they get together at someone's home and they, visit or whatever it is, and the husband wants a quiet Friday night at the end of a work week. It's not his thing. So they may work on alternating. One Friday night with the friends, the next one at home, see how that works out. If that doesn't work out, they yield and they work something else out. They figure it out. They work towards figuring it out. And that's the idea. Here's another one. It's a scenario, he says. The wife says like this, I like to eat out once a week. I'm glad to cook dinner after I get home from work, but I'd like one night a week off. Husband responds, I don't object in principle, but it's difficult on a tight budget to go out once a week for dinner. How about if I relieve you and cook dinner one night a week? And the wife says, hey, if you could cook, let's split the kitchen duties. Don't just cook one night a week. Cook three nights a week. Then the husband says, you know something? Maybe we could manage to budget out a meal once a week going out to dinner. So this is like a humorous way of working that out, Finance is the same idea. Husband says, I don't like credit cards. If you pay cash, You think about whether you'll buy it or not, but with credit card, you don't think, and then you just spend. Wife says, I could agree with that. I could take checks out from the checkbook before I go shopping. That way I'll write down exactly the amount, and it'll be more conscientious, and maybe I'll spend less. And the husband says, no, that's not good, because if you forget to fill out the stub when you come back home, or you forget the exact amount of your pay, it messes up my checkbook. So the wife responds, okay, so how about if I have a separate bank account, put some money in there, we'll work out the details, and I'll carry a small checkbook in my purse, whatever it is. But the bottom line is the very discussions about these things and working out a solution is part of a healthy marriage. It's part of a healthy marriage. But the idea, though, is the idea of the concept that I can change him and her to see it my way is a source of misery. Is a source of misery. Your partner in life, and you basically are shutfim with each other, your friendship with each other. You're not each other's mother or father or teacher or therapist, your husband and wife. And that's the relationship between the two of you, a husband and wife, which is indeed ideally a very deep friendship besides those aspects of love. Another concept that he talks about is the idea of permanence, the idea of not just considering things in life cheap. We live in a disposable age. This is killing us. Technology, because things are so instant, has eroded our tolerance for endurance. You have jet planes, fax machines, now it's beyond fax machines, instant foods, microwave ovens. We want immediate results. So we feel that way with our relationships. The willingness to repair relationships that suffered, meaning that we go through bumps in the road in marriage and we make a commitment, we want to fix this, is obsolete these days. It's terrible. He says when he was younger, Rabbi Twersky, he had a fountain pen that he received by his bar mitzvah, and he kept it for 20 years. He felt connected to it, and it shows some value. No one would bother having something old repaired or that you had for a while repaired. You just throw it out. You get a new one. So that could apply to diapers, to tableware, to contact lenses, those ones that are disposable, and so on. And pots also, once they get worn out, you get another pot. But it's destructive in relationships, a husband and wife relationship. We have this in our head. It fell into our culture. Don't bother fixing the relationship. Just discard it. Get another one. Or they resigned it. They say, this is not, they just reject the whole thing without wanting to work on it and salvage it and make it the best possible marriage that it could be, despite the bumps in the road that took a car. We're not used to thinking that way. We lost our ability to think that way. And that is very, very important to get that back and recognize you cannot treat other people like objects that are disposable. Everyone is created with a tzelem elikim, and they're indispensable. Again, are there relationships that are incompatible? There are few. That's why divorce is allowed in the Torah. You ask a mentor, and again, we discount the whatever small percent there is of a real serious abuse, addiction, of a serious order, and mental disorders and things like that. Putting that aside, okay, we should have separate shurim when we focus on those aspects of things, b'li neder, but in 95+% of marriages, that's not the way it is. A lot of marriages that ended up in divorces could have been salvaged, but the word salvage means like a bidiyevet, not necessarily bidiyevet. It could really, truly thrive. And that is the concept to put seeds in our minds, no matter how long we're married or how little we're married, to recognize no matter what it was till now, with the framework of changing yourself, of working through your own stuff, like this chapter is called, it's not as business as usual, to recognize that you have to make changes, to recognize that you have to accept people for who they are, and they're different than you, and other families are different than your families, and their natures are different than your natures, and accept them fully, that will create a truly enhanced and permanent relationship, which Hashem wants, and by working hard on it, Hashem will shower brachos on the couple because he desires shalom, and Hashem is there where there's shalom. And when the Shekhinah rests, everything has beauty and tremendous bracha. Bracha v'atzlacha.